Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Now, Dr. Paul Dalton, Associate Professor of Psychology at UCD and Head of Psychology at St. Vincent's University Hospital, is back with us this week, and you're very welcome back again, Paul.
Thank you, Sarah.
If you have any questions for Paul, you can text us to 51551 or you can tweet the programme at DriveTimeRTE. And over the last couple of weeks, as you may know, we've been talking about anxiety, which is a problem that is going to affect one in three of us, would you believe, over the course of our lifetime. And last week, Paul, we were talking about the anxiety people feel, well, we just touched on it really, the anxiety that people feel in crowded places. You described it as agoraphobia, and we promised we'd come back to it this week. So tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah. You know, Sarah, so over the last few weeks, you said we've been talking about different kinds of anxiety. So we looked at generalized anxiety a couple of weeks ago. We've kind of touched on social anxiety, panic disorder, and that particular type of anxiety that you've just mentioned there, agoraphobia. Now, agoraphobia will affect a relatively small number of people, about 2% of the population. Interestingly, more women than men. But agoraphobia is essentially a fear of being in a situation where escape might be difficult, where it might be difficult for me to get out of there, or where help wouldn't be available, where things might go wrong. So Sarah, things like public transport, for example, being in a closed-in space like a shopping centre, or standing in a queue, or even being outside in a large open space on your own. So people with agoraphobia then tend to avoid these situations. And in the most severe cases, people with agoraphobia can become housebound. The world becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, and people develop ways to manage it. I remember seeing a man many years ago with pretty severe agoraphobia. And he used to drive to the supermarket. And his trick was to look at the number of shopping trolleys outside, so he could tell if there were lots of shopping trolleys outside, there were relatively few people inside. Wow. So it was safe for him to go in. So people with anxiety, when we have anxiety, but when we have this kind of anxiety, we find all sorts of ways to manage the world. But the problem is, Sarah, the world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. I always think it's helpful to look at the origins of these words as well. So agoraphobia comes from the Greek. So agro is essentially a kind of a marketplace or an assembly, kind of like the village square, let's say, and phobia, as we know, is fear. So it translates to fear of the marketplace. Years ago, about 10 years ago, I remember being in the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul. There's 600 covered-in streets, about 400 shops. Could be 300,000 people a day in and out of that. And I remember getting into the middle of that and going, having a glimpse of what agoraphobia is. Oh, there's no way out. I don't know how to get out of here. I can't escape. So that's what defines agoraphobia.
Is it different from claustrophobia?
It is. And we often use those terms interchangeably. Claustrophobia, and again, often helpful just to go back to the origin of the world, clustrum, so a fear of closed spaces. So if you think about it like this, so someone with agoraphobia could be very afraid in the middle of Lansdowne Road or Crow Park. Someone with claustrophobia would be terrified in the Alloway Caves. Someone with claustrophobia would be terrified getting into a lift or a revolving door. So claustrophobia is that fear of a cramped space and what might happen there. Agoraphobia is really a fear there of, in a situation, there isn't going to be someone who I feel safe with. So if I have a panic attack, I'm in trouble. And often what people fear is, yes, the panic attack, or what becomes very, very, very difficult for people is a fear that they will lose control of bodily function. So sometimes with agoraphobia, people's fear is that they lose bladder or bowel control.
Really? Okay.
So you can imagine then how small the world gets and the things we need to do in order to manage that. And I often think, sir, it is, you know, often about needing that sense of safety or needing to know there's someone who's there who's going to help me. But unfortunately, that's not always doable, you know?
Is this something we're seeing more of in COVID?
I think I'd be reluctant to say that we're seeing more of agoraphobia. I'd say there is no doubt that we are seeing more anxiety and more anxiety when it comes to being in places, because in some ways, at a very basic level, we have to learn how to do all those things again. We'll talk a little bit about this next week when we talk about social anxiety. So yeah, maybe an increase in general anxiety, but agoraphobia and indeed claustrophobia are really, really very, they're very distinct forms of anxiety. And I think when it comes to both of them, what triggers the fear in both of those is that idea of, well, what could happen in this enclosed space or in this wide open space. So with anxiety generally, we described it a couple of weeks ago, Sarah, as the kind of scenario building. So I go through all the scenarios in my head, the kind of but what if? Now, most of us at some point in our lives will find ourselves awake at 4 o'clock in the morning with the, oh, but what if? And what if? And what if? But we can kind of manage it. And when it gets out of hand, we're into the anxiety territory.
And is that because we've got a couple of texts in on this one from Francis, who says, I have anxiety in relation to driving on motorways or high speed roads. Is there help available? Is this agoraphobia? And it sort of ties in with another text from a listener who says, I'd love to go on holiday with my family. It's causing me a lot of problems because I get panicked when I have to go on an aeroplane. What can I do? Mm-hmm. So what would you suggest for both those people?
So actually here we've listed two particular books that I think are going to be very helpful. Overcoming Anxiety by a woman called Helen Kinnearly, and a wonderful book written by an Irish psychiatrist, Áine Tuberty, called When Panic Attacks. Really good, sensible books that will really help people with some of those kinds of issues. And the other thing that's really helpful is a website run by the HSE called The Power of Words. And The Power of Words basically lists resources that are helpful for people to kind of navigate their way through some of those difficulties. And I guess, Sarah, you know, always helpful to remember that the GP is a good port of call for these kinds of things, because as I said, Sarah, we don't need to be held hostage by anxiety. It doesn't have to be how we live our lives.
James has texted to say, my granddaughter has been having panic attacks for the last 4 years, had some counselling but still has some attacks when under pressure or stress. Would you recommend medication at this stage? Now, I know you're not in a position to be recommending medication, but what can you say to James?
Again, I think that's a really, really good GP for protocol there, really important.
Okay. You don't have to live with it. Like you
do. Sarah, that's a really, really important point. This is not, anxiety is not a life sentence. It does not have to be this way for the rest of your life. And we touched on this last week, and I'm going to say it again, if you let me. Anxiety is not, it's not your fault. You haven't done something wrong. These brains of ours are tricky. And they get us into loops. Sorry, we're a narrative-based people. We tell ourselves stories, and very often those stories trigger anxiety. So maybe the last thing, just, it's not your fault. You know, it's not.
Okay. Dr. Paul Dalton, as always, a pleasure speaking to you, and thank you very much for coming in to us.